The Shape of Me Will Always Be You by Mr. Soriental, read by Kurtz. This is a Hannibal fanfiction, with the pairing of Will Graham / Hannibal Lecter. Summary. They've survived their clifftop plunge. Now Hannibal's vanished and Will's pining. In the midst of new threats and a re-emergence of old ones, it takes a series of unexplained events to help Will realize Hannibal may be closer than he dared hoped for. Post-canon fix it, and a journey through the resolution of the ultimate love crime. Chapter 1. I dreamt about you today. At least, I thought I did. Maybe it was more like dreaming while awake. You came into my hospital room and pulled up the shabby plastic chair, wincing a little at the scraping sound as you pulled it across the floor towards my bed. Then you folded yourself into it, crossing your long legs just so, and you watched me. Just sitting. Sitting and staring. You were wearing one of those ridiculously flamboyant suits that would look like hell on anyone else, but lend you a certain exotic, rarefied glamour. It's been so long since I've seen you in one of those suits, I'd nearly forgotten about them. Years since I've seen you wearing anything that wasn't institutional issue or splashed in scarlet. So initially, I was looking more at the suit than I was at you. You wouldn't have liked that, I don't think. You're such a narcissist. You don't fit in at all in this drab setting, all your colour and energy completely misplaced. When I looked at your face, you seemed attentive, a very faint smile playing around your mouth. You always were so inscrutable, sphinx-like. I never really knew what you were thinking. "Hello, Will," you said finally. Your eyes were like two black holes. "What are you doing here?" It probably wasn't the best thing to ask you, demand of you. But then, I didn't know what else to say. I wasn't aware I needed to provide a reason.
"You always have a reason, though, don't you? You have a reason for everything. And now you're here, and you're not even real."
Now I've looked at your eyes, I can't stop staring, trying not to get lost in them. You notice my fascination and my reluctance. Of course you do. And that faint smile grows ever so slightly broader.
You relish it. Narcissist.
I close my own eyes to get away from yours, and in the darkness I hear you push back the chair and prowl towards the bed. You're sauntering, lithe and cat-like. I can't see you, but I know that you are. And I feel the mattress dip as you sit down. I sense your breath on my face, incredibly light, barely there. Your spidery fingers brushing over my cheekbone, and I breathe in again and open my eyes.
At least I think I do.
Maybe they were already open. And of course, you're not there. There's a gloomy dribble of light from under the door, and the blinking of the heart monitor, and footsteps and muttered voices, and all the sounds of sickness and death. But there's no you. And you are spectacularly loud in your absence. The room screams with its lack of you. I take a deep breath and it hurts, and I untangle the IV line to grab the glass of water next to the bed. My hands are shaking. It's almost unbearable that even my mental vision of you still manages to remain several steps ahead. Katie Purnell is sat next to the bed, sat on your chair. It's always going to feel like your chair now, I can tell. She's been here for nearly an hour, barking questions at me like a dog. Yap, yap, yap. I can't tell how much of her defensiveness is down to genuine reservations about the statement I gave, which wasn't exactly lies, as opposed to a liberal manipulation of the truth. Sort of like bullshit light. And how much is her just being a dick for the sake of it, bludgeoning me with her authority simply because she can? Maybe she just wants to feel that she's being thorough, ticking boxes and crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I'm not sure, really. She's hard to read. Although I suppose with one dead and mangled serial killer, one missing one, and a half-dead FBI profiler washed up on a beach, that the thoroughness is not entirely unreasonable. She says something predictable and probably prescripted about an exhaustive official inquiry, rehearsed, no doubt, to instill exactly the right amount of dread and compliance. If I try hard enough, I can even imagine her practicing it in a mirror beforehand, perfecting the various purses of lips and furrowing of eyebrows. She's obviously trying to intimidate me, and I promptly zone out, because seriously, who cares? They won't catch you. If you're still alive, you won't let them find you unless you want them to. It will all be part of the game. If you are still alive. No, you're not dead, though. You're not. I have absolutely no objective evidence for assuming this, but I believe it nonetheless. I'd know if you were dead, wouldn't I? I'd just know. You were extremely lucky, Mr. Graham, she says, grudgingly, as if I've been lucky just to annoy her, as if my good luck is a matter of immense personal dissatisfaction. I'm quite impressed in spite of myself. Such meticulously measured venom. Not as good as yours, of course. But not bad. Not bad at all. I'd give her a good 7 out of 10. Someone found you, she continues. She's still dwelling on how lucky I am. As if I care. Pulled you out of the water, dressed the wounds on your face and chest. She trails off, uncertain how to proceed. She doesn't say that this random Good Samaritan was you, but she doesn't need to, because of course it was. When I shut my eyes, I'm certain I can even remember it. Your hand on the back of my head, cradling my skull, as calm and efficient as always, but spiced underneath with an air of carefully controlled desperation, because I'm not responding to you, and you're struggling to locate my pulse. Breathe, Will, you said. Breathe for me. I need you to breathe. You're holding the gash in my cheek together with your long fingers, making an airtight channel into my mouth so you can perform CPR. I need you to live, Will, you were saying. I need you to live for me. On second thoughts, perhaps I invented that last part. In fact, I almost certainly did. It doesn't really seem like the sort of thing that you would say. My mind starts to drift, and I imagine what you would do if you were here. How you would take her apart with perfectly constructed little verbal parries and quirks of a single pale eyebrow. Or more likely, just literally take her apart, probably with your bare hands. With one bare hand tied behind your back. She's staring at me now, with barely concealed distaste. Did I say something to amuse you, Mr. Graham? She snaps. A staccato voice jolts me back into the room like nails down a chalkboard, and I blink at her, disoriented.
I'm sorry. What?
I say stupidly. Behind my eyes, you're smirking at me. You're smiling. I wasn't aware this was a laughing matter. So, did I say something to amuse you? Oh God, why do people ask questions like this? It's not as if she expects or wants a truthful answer. I briefly wonder what she would do if I said, yes, actually, you are. Enormously so. Or even, yes, and guess exactly how many fucks I give about that. Count them. Done.
I wasn't smiling.
I say instead.
I was grimacing. I'm actually in a considerable amount of pain, ma'am.
She stares at me, clearly disbelieving, and not particularly impressed with the blatantly piss-taking ma'am. She's not going to pursue it, though. She can't really be bothered. She's going to let it go, so in return I arrange my face into a suitably earnest expression and give her my full attention. Quid pro quo. It's not like it's really worth imagining what you would do anyway. I never was all that reliable at predicting you, was I? You'd probably be just as likely to take me apart as her. Yes, well, she says, and gathers her purse up in a fussy way and clutches the strap. She's losing control of this exchange, and she knows it. What she really wants, clearly, is to just tell me to fuck off. The fact that she can't, and is desperate to, is actually extremely satisfying. We stare at each other, sizing each other up.
Thanks for stopping by,
I say finally, dismissing her. It takes my last shred of self-control to not start smiling again. Her thin, feral face twitches, and she rakes her eyes up and down my body in poorly concealed contempt. We're not really done here. I know this. I haven't really won. Fuck it, though. I'll deal with her later. And a fleeting victory is a victory nonetheless. Right now, I just want to close my eyes and not open them again for a very, very long time. Wishing you a speedy recovery, Mr. Graham, is all she says.
Yeah, right.
And then she stands up, drawing herself to her full height, impressive in her glossy heels, and glowers at me. She really does. There's no other word for it. And does a neat little spin on her toes and heads to the door. I achieve my ambition of closing my eyes and just lie there, feeling vaguely martyred. I'm disgusted to realize my hands are trembling slightly and ram them under the covers. She closes the door sharply behind her. Her heels sound all the way down the corridor in little self-important thrusts. Click, click, click. And I imagine what it would be like to spear her through the heart with one of her own overpriced stilettos. I try to feel shocked at myself afterwards and can't quite manage it. A little vulgar, Will, don't you think? I hear you say. But I know you're smiling in spite of yourself. Some time passes. I don't know how much. And there's noise outside the room, and when I hitch open an eye, I can see a tall silhouette through the frosted glass. It's a man, I can tell from the build. Broad shoulders, powerfully built. It's not going to be you, I tell myself. It's not, oh God. And the door opens all the way, and of course, it's not you. It's Jack, resplendent in an overcoat and that ludicrous fedora hat, radiating awkwardness. In fact, he's practically vibrating with it, rippling off him in waves. His hands are clenched awkwardly behind his back as if he's clutching something, and for a surreal, appalling moment, I think he's brought me flowers. He hasn't, of course. Thank God. It's rather that he doesn't know what to do with his hands. He unfolds them around the front of his body and clasps them around his stomach, then lets them go entirely and they swing at his sides like pendula.
Well, well.
He manages finally, and his words run together and trip over themselves in an effort to escape his mouth so it sounds all garbled. Well, Will. Will, Will. I feel my lips twitch again. When did I become so hysterical? I never used to laugh. So solemn, Will. I remember you once saying, so serious all the time. Jack gives it another go, battling on undeterred. I've got to hand it to him.
Hey, Will,
he says. Better. And then, after a pause,
you look like hell.
Not so much better.
Yeah,
I say.
I just got back.
I don't really mind, though. I do look like hell. At least he doesn't ask me how I'm feeling when it's obvious that, by any commonly accepted criteria, I feel like seven shades of shit. He snorts a bit at that and gingerly draws up the chair, your chair, to the side of the bed. Whatever resources he corralled to get him this far have clearly expired, because he falls silent again, clasping and unclasping his hands. Of course. I stare back at him, suddenly struck equally dumb. I can't think of a single thing to say to him, and he clearly can't either. And I start wondering if we're just going to gaze at each other until the ward closes for the night, and a nurse appears to escort him out, magnificent in his stony silence. Jack looks unhappy, because of course he does, and emits a low rumbling sigh.
How's that doing?
He says finally, gesturing at his cheek to correspond to where the dressing is on my own. I try to shrug in response and end up regretting it because it sends shivers of pain all over, radiating out from the stab wound on my chest. Fucking Francis Dolarhyde and his vicious, grinning little knife.
Could have been worse,
I manage finally. Although, probably not much worse.
They don't think the scar will be too bad.
Not that I really care either way. It's just another brand, another mark traceable back to you, like your handprints all over my body. A dueling scar, earned in combat.
You can cover it up anyway with that mangy little beard of yours,
says Jack, and I half had a laugh because what else can I do? His awkwardness is now reaching levels of intensity that are positively operatic, and I find myself feeling sorry for him.
It's okay, Jack,
I say finally.
You know none of this is your fault. I know,
he says, which pisses me off a bit because I was expecting at least some level of protest.
Serves me right, I suppose.
I should have known there was no way I'd get the chance to be magnanimous with him. Jack sighs again, so I sigh too to keep him company.
Hell of a scene you boys left behind,
he finally says.
A total bloody mess.
That's one way of putting it, I suppose.
Caught you the tooth fairy though, didn't I?
I reply. A pause.
In a manner of speaking.
Jack smiles a bit.
Yeah, you did.
He pauses as well. I glance down at his hands, and of course they're spiraling and twisting together.
Will, you also lost us Hannibal Lecter.
I stare at him for a moment, shocked into genuine silence. I can feel my mouth working uselessly. I must look ridiculous, like a fish gasping for air. I bet you've never looked like I do now, have you? Not once in your entire life.
Oh, for God's sake, Jack,
I manage finally.
I didn't lose Hannibal Lecter. It wasn't like I forgot to put him in the back of the car and then drove home and was like, oh, where did Hannibal Lecter go?
I pull in a deep, raw gasp of air.
I got stabbed and thrown off a cliff.
I pause again. This time I definitely do not add, in a manner of speaking. He's undeterred by this, of course. Splendid in his sense of righteous endeavor. Jack Crawford, once more into the breach.
Will, you know I need to ask you this. You know I do. Were you aware he was going to run?
He gives me a hard stare.
It would hardly be the first time, would it?
For a brief, appalling moment, I feel like I might actually cry.
I have absolutely no idea what happened to him.
I finally manage.
I've told people this. I made a statement. He went over the cliff when I did. We killed Dollarhide. He grabbed me.
Careful, I think. We lost our balance. We went over.
He could be dead. He probably is. He could be, and yes, he probably is,
Jack says.
But then, so could you. And you're not.
No, I say.
I'm not. And we're all very glad about that,
replies Jack, with truly appalling heartiness. He's feeling guilty now, his back pedaling. Pushed and probed to get a reaction and is satisfied that my distress is genuine, so is prepared to back off, for the time being. Job done. Anyway, it really is his fault. Sort of. He looks a little happier, though, some of the tension leaching out of him. Maybe he doesn't entirely believe me, but he certainly wants to. He smiles at me again, all avuncular and good-natured. Give him a little more time and he'll possibly work himself up to ruffle my hair and call me Buster. Oh God, he's not actually going to, is he? Not that this display is all, or even mostly, about me. It's principally for his benefit. He needs to put me back in my place, revert me into a tame, fragile being that's no threat and can be patronized and condescended to. For all his seeming astuteness, he really has no idea about anything.
Katie speak to you yet?
He says. I roll my eyes extravagantly in lieu of a response, and he barks out another one of those laughs. Surely he should have already known that, though. He shouldn't have to check. They're all pretty useless, really. No one seeming to know what anyone else is doing. No wonder you ran increasingly elegant rings around them for so long. Jack, like me, seems to have reached his tolerance level for this exchange, and he makes a performance of gathering up his coat and that stupid hat. I wonder if you could get away with a hat like that. Probably you could, just rakish, slightly pulled down towards one eye.
Take care, Will,
Jack says. He pats me gingerly on the shoulder. I smile back at him because this is what I'm supposed to do.
We'll speak more later,
he adds, and it's both a threat and a promise. After he's gone, I stretch out and close my eyes, enjoying the peace and silence. Fucking finally. After a while, I open them again. But you're not there. Of course you're not.
I don't know where you are,
I say aloud. I hope no one can hear me. I can just imagine the anxious update in my medical file. Will Graham is currently lying in his room, happily talking to himself. But it doesn't bother me enough to make me stop. It's not my fault. I shouldn't have to be talking to myself. I should be talking to you. But I don't know where you are. I really don't. You're nowhere, but you could be anywhere, all at the same time.
Even if I knew where you are, I wouldn't tell them. I wouldn't let them take you,
I say to the darkness. The because you're mine is unspoken. But if you were sitting in your chair, you'd hear it anyway. You'd know. You always knew.